giving you a behind-the-scenes look of Smashville's team. This is Brett's Insiders with Adam Vingan and Willie Donig. Smashville lives here on 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Brett's Insiders on 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan and Willie Donig here with you on Wednesday evening following another wonderful episode of Smashville Live starring Ryan Ufko and Zachary LaRue. Thank you for joining us on your drive home from Smashville Live, or whenever you're listening to this. The Nashville Predators, when you're hot, you're hot. The Predators, 5 consecutive wins last night at Bridgestone Arena, a 6-3 win against the San Jose Sharks. 5 goals in the first period. And not only 5 goals, Willie, 5 goals on their first 7 shots. The NHL pointed this out this morning. The league has been tracking real-time shot data since the 2009-2010 season, so more than 15 years at this point. Last night was just the 6th time since 2009-2010 that a team has scored on 5 of its first 7 shots of a game. And as I said, Willie, when you're hot, you're hot.
It was a really remarkable first period there, considering that the Predators have been a poor first period team for most of the season. I think they came into the game minus 21 in first periods. That certainly helped. And it shows you how they've been going down the difficult path to get into this position. But their starts of late, especially during this run that they're on, have been better. And that is a really good thing to see. But last night was extreme. I think they exposed the weaknesses of the Sharks. The Sharks, once they got way behind, did start to look more like a team that is a threat. But the Sharks right now have got some issues with their defense core, and they're not getting any saves right now to make up for it.
The Predators open a 7-point lead against the Sharks in the Western Conference playoff race. The Sharks do have 2 games in hand, and these two teams will meet 2 more times before the end of the regular season. Let's point out some stars of the game last night. Philip Forsberg continues to be on fire. 12 points during this winning streak. 12 points, 5 assists, 5 goals, 7 assists in the past 5 games. He has 3 points in 3 of his past 4 games. So Philip Forsberg, as Predators fans know, February, there wasn't a February this season because of the Olympic break, so I guess he's just doing it in March. I haven't come up with a good nickname for that, perhaps Marchy Madness in honor of Jonathan Marchessault. I credit Robbie Stanley with that one. But Forsberg has been part of a dynamic line over the past few weeks. Matthew Wood inserted at center following the trade deadline. He's been playing between Forsberg and Marchessault. We saw Wood score again last night. He has 6 goals in his past 10 games. That line at 5-on-5 over the past 10 games has outscored opponents 5-1. And I think you can see Matthew Wood's confidence growing every game. The goal he scored last night, he's on an odd man break with Philip Forsberg. Forsberg isn't quite ready to receive a pass, but Wood takes it himself, rockets one into the back of the net. Even if Forsberg, Willie, had been ready for that pass, I wouldn't have been shocked if Wood would have fired it anyway, because he's feeling it right now. And that line really does seem to be gelling.
That line has been a difference maker, especially during this streak that they're on. But also, I think it sets things up for the stretch run here, because it's got layers to it, short-term and long-term. Matt Wood's emergence as a guy who not only is playing center, but he is moving the needle at center, and he's bringing out the best in 2 critical players in Philip Forsberg and Jonathan Marchessault, and it's giving them a second line. I think for a while, people were wondering, how long could you sustain if you're only really getting production from Ryan O'Reilly's line? But now you've got 2 threats that I think are having to be accounted for by the opposition. And that has helped them because, and we're going to get into this a little bit later, they haven't had the puck quite as much in these recent games, but they've made up for it by just really strong playmaking and some really good special teams.
What's interesting, actually, is analytically, that line hasn't been dominating.
Right.
As you said, they have generated 44.7% of the expected goals over the past 10 games. That's not a good number. They are outperforming that expectation by scoring 5 of the 6 goals when they've been on the ice over the past 10 games, and you would rather them outperform expectations, of course. But something to keep an eye on, the scoring chances for that line have been 25 for the opposition, 16 for the Predators when that line has been on the ice. So the puck is going in. That's good. But I do think there is another gear that line can find to get the better of the shot quality battle.
Yeah. So that's important to point out for sure, is they're making plays, but there's still room for improvement there. And I think you would say that about Matt Wood's game in the big picture. He's just 21 years of age. He's learning the nuances. Andrew Burnett cited in particular the Vegas game as a great learning experience. When you go up against the big boys who have the depth and you're facing Jack Eichel and you're facing the big defenseman that they have, the stingy D, it's a lot harder to do what he's capable of doing. So that will be the challenge going forward. But I think what is happening as a net result, forget about the results, but you're getting inspired play by Philip Forsberg, who always, when he's got that extra gear, you can see it in his game. You can tell right away. He's just moving at a different speed. He's moving with a different power to him, and he's confident with some of these sorcery moves that he makes, like the kick pass he made in Chicago, where he put the puck behind his body and kicked it like a soccer ball for a really good pass, and these no-look saucer passes he's making right now. He's just really clicking on all cylinders. He always seems to do that for stretches of a season. It's good timing here. And then maybe most important of all, Jonathan Marchessault is playing his most inspired hockey, I think, since he's been a Predator. And he's now got 18 points in his last 22 games. And I think they're looking forward to playing with Matt Wood, as opposed to before when everybody was kind of saying, when are you going to put me back on Ryan O'Reilly's line? That's the guy that's getting it done. That's the center I want to play with. But Wood's emergence has now given them a couple of guys that are like, okay, this guy, he's going to see me. I'm going to be open. He's got the vision to get me the puck.
Steven Stamkos scored again, his 35th goal of the season on the power play to give the Predators a 6-1 lead in the second period last night. Steven Stamkos has turned back time, it seems. He has 31 goals in his past 49 games. That is tied with Montreal's Cole Caulfield, who will be here on Saturday, for the most in the NHL since November 26th. That date, by the way, is when the Predator season really started to turn around. Keep in mind that Stamkos, I believe, had 4 goals around Thanksgiving, and I wondered if the Steven Stamkos, who routinely scored 40 goals for the Tampa Bay Lightning, was firmly in the past. But credit to him, he is scoring at the moment at a 52-goal pace over a full season. So Steven Stamkos, we've highlighted this, Willie. He really made a change to how he attacked the net when he started scoring more. He stopped relying so much on the one-timer. We know he can score on the one-timer. That will never age. But he started going to the front of the net. He was scoring a lot more from the inner slot. So Steven Stamkos, 31 goals in his past 49 games, a 52-goal pace over a full season. He has, I don't know if this is too strong, he has certainly resurrected himself, because I wondered last season and during the early part of this season if Stamkos may be, for lack of a better term, washed up.
I think we've hit on this as this has progressed throughout the last few months, because I think we were all very concerned early on. I think he had 1 goal in the first month or so. Then he had the big moment in Sweden, the overtime game winner, but still, when you got around to November 26th, it hadn't happened every night. But it's been so consistent since then. Jacob Underwood from our staff tracked this. We had this last night on our broadcast. It's an illustration of how he's adapted to his game and finding new ways to score and not just relying on his reliable shot, which he's got going right now. He really has still got it. And you get the feeling with his shot, he could be 45 years old and he'll still be really good with that shot. But what I think he's discovered is at this stage of his career and the team he's playing on, they needed him to adapt. He's got more goals from inside of 15 feet this year, Adam, 14, than he had the previous two seasons combined. He had 14 the previous two seasons, his first year with the Predators and his last year with the Tampa Bay Lightning, a season in which he scored 40 goals that year. And he had 27 last year, which is not nothing. But they were all from a lot more of them were from the perimeter, where we're used to seeing him score, that one-timer from the left circle and all of that. But, for example, the goal he scored in Chicago, in a huge goal to tie the game, that was in the slot. He got to the net front. So he's finding ways to score from different areas of the ice. He's adapted to his teammates, and he has uncovered another chapter here.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, we'll take a look at the Western Conference wildcard race. How does the Predators' strength of schedule compare to their direct competitors for the wildcard spots in the Western Conference? We'll discuss that coming up next. It's Preds Insiders with Adam Vingan and Willie Donick here on 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders on 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan and Willie Donick here with you. Predators win last night 6-3 against the San Jose Sharks, Nashville's season-high fifth consecutive win, 7 wins in the past 10 games, 8 points in 8 of the past 10 games. So the Predators are indeed rolling. They are in a playoff spot, 77 points, 3 ahead of the LA Kings for the second and final playoff spot in the Western Conference. And Willie, this is what we're going to do during this segment. We're going to take a look at how the Predator schedule compares to some of the other teams they are competing with for the wild card spots in the Western Conference. And by the way, we've been talking about Los Angeles, Seattle, Winnipeg, San Jose. We can now include Utah in this conversation. The Predators are 3 points back of the Utah Mammoth for the first wild card spot. Utah lost last night in regulation 5-2 to the Edmonton Oilers. So the Predators are creeping up on the first wild card spot. And man, what a difference that would make if the Predators make the playoffs in that first wild card spot. They would cross over to the Pacific Division, which Connor McDavid referred to late last week as, quote unquote, a pillow fight. Much different than the gauntlet in the Central Division with the Avalanche, Stars, and Wild. So I go to my favorite website, Willie Donick, tankathon.com.
Oh, yeah.
Tankathon.com has a handy remaining schedule strength tool. And the way that Tankathon lays it out, it ranks the teams 1 through 32. If you're number 1, that means you have the hardest remaining strength of schedule. If you're 32nd, it means you have the easiest remaining strength of schedule. The Predators are 20th on this list in remaining strength of schedule. The website looks at the toughest and easiest remaining opponents. So under toughest remaining opponents, the Predators have the Tampa Bay Lightning on the road, the Minnesota Wild, the Montreal Canadiens, and 2 games against the Anaheim Ducks. In the easiest category, 2 games against the Sharks, 2 games against the Kings, 1 against the Devils, 1 against the Mammoth. Now, I'm not exactly sure how they determine who's tough and who's easy.
Well, but I think that's a very important question, too.
Yes.
That depends on who you ask and how you debate it.
It is a good question. Hey, look, you can actually sort it by conference. So let me do that instead. That makes it easier. So here are some of the other teams in competition with the Predators in terms of remaining strength of schedule. The easiest remaining strength of schedule, at least according to Tankathon in the NHL, is the LA Kings. Tankathon says the Kings have 0 remaining games against quote-unquote tough opponents. However, the Kings have 3 games against the Canucks, who are the worst team in the NHL, 1 against the Flames, 1 against the Blues, 1 against the Maple Leafs, 1 against the Kraken, and 2 against the Predators. So the Kings, they don't have any tough matchups on their horizon in terms of where those teams are in the standings. San Jose has one game against Columbus and two against Anaheim, but one against Vancouver, two against Chicago, two against St. Louis, one against Toronto, one against Winnipeg, and two against Nashville. So the Predators, they've got some tough matchups upcoming. That back-to-back this weekend, especially, Willie. The home game against Montreal, the road game in Tampa. Those are two of the top teams in the Eastern Conference. Nikita Kucherov is on a scoring spree that puts him in rare Hall of Fame company. And the Canadiens are a great story. Cole Caulfield, as I mentioned, one of the best goal scorers in the NHL. You tell me if this is hyperbole. I think this weekend's back-to-back is sort of a, what's the word I'm looking for here? Like an access point. Like, I think if the Predators can come out of that weekend back-to-back with 2 or 3 points, I think they could be in good shape. If they struggle against those two teams, it might open the door for some of the competitors.
I think the way you look at it is, I think all 11 games are the most important game of the year. I think it's that close, but you're right. That will be a great test. That's not a great matchup on paper, having to travel to Tampa after a night game on Saturday and play the next day against a team as good as Tampa Bay. That's a tough draw. But let's go back to, you know, Tankathon and sort of labeling the schedule strength. I think it's debatable, and I'll give you an example. Let's take Thursday's opponent, the Devils. They're not going to make the playoffs. So on that chart at Tankathon, it's, well, they're playing this bad team or this non-playoff team.
Mm-hmm.
The Devils are playing really well right now. They just won in Dallas, where it's hard to win. They've won 8 out of 11. They've got Jack Hughes, who's on a tour after his, you know, fame for the gold medal. They're fairly healthy. They are a dangerous team. That is, if that's labeled an easy game, that's not an easy game at all. I'll give you another example of a team that's going to be a factor here going down the stretch. The St. Louis Blues. They're playing fantastic hockey right now. So they're labeled a team. Well, they're at the bottom of the West. They're not very good. I don't think you want to be playing the Blues right now. They're awfully tough. In fact, if they win tomorrow night against the Sharks, they'll be ahead of the Sharks. So if we're considering the Sharks a playoff team, you might ought to throw St. Louis in there. And the Sharks have fallen back some. And so right now, having lost 5 in a row, the Sharks have to, they're so young, they're getting exposed right now for their weaknesses. They're still way ahead of the curve on where everybody thought they would be. But they're fighting to stay in the race right now. So I think I'm focused a lot more on that LA schedule because they do have the weakest schedule. But last night's a good example. They're in Calgary. They have the lead down the stretch of the third period. And like all of their games, it goes to overtime. That's their 18th overtime loss of the season. But the Kings, regardless of who they play, it seems to be a close game no matter what. So these games aren't gimme. Sometimes it's hard to play the loose teams that have some talent. Vancouver is at the bottom of the standings. They're not in danger of coming up out of the bottom. So I don't think there's any reason for them to sit anybody, but I'm curious to see if Vancouver can pick off a few teams between now and the end of the season.
The Kings, by the way, also have a 7-game homestand coming up, which includes 2 visits from the Nashville Predators.
2 on the same road trip, which makes no sense.
Utah,
St. Louis. How about just playing a 2-game series? Ever heard of that?
Yes. Utah, St. Louis, Nashville, Toronto, Nashville, Vancouver, Edmonton. That is Los Angeles' 7-game homestand between March 28th and April 11th. So a big opportunity there for the Kings to get back in the race. As I mentioned, Willie, at the top of the segment, it would change the path for the Predators tremendously if they are able to overtake Utah for that first wild card spot. Again, Utah 4-4-2 in its past 10 games. Utah lost 5-2 last night against the Edmonton Oilers at home. And now the Predators are just 3 points back of Utah for that first wild card spot. Those two teams, by the way, play each other April 9th in Salt Lake City. That is a huge game. I can already tell you that right now, a few weeks out.
Every game. Like it,
yes.
You mentioned this set of three games against the East, you know, back-to-backs against Montreal and Tampa. The next set is that road trip that we've already referenced. Two trips to L.A., a trip to San Jose, at Anaheim on a back end of back-to-backs, and at Utah. So that is a tough road.
You look at the Pacific Division, and right now, if the playoffs were to start today and the Predators overtake Utah, they would face the Anaheim Ducks in the first round of the playoffs. And that would be an interesting series for a couple of reasons. One, there's that built-in rivalry between the two franchises. It's not the same as in 2017, for example, or 2016, but there is no love lost between the Ducks and the Predators. The Ducks, like the Predators, missed the playoffs last season. I believe they missed the playoffs by a significant amount. Yes, the Ducks missed the playoffs by 16 points last season. So a series between two teams that missed the playoffs last season, I can't imagine that's happened too often. And the Ducks, they remind me a bit of the Sharks. Their core players are all younger. They haven't had that playoff experience. The Ducks have a lot of veterans. They traded for John Carlson at the deadline. They've got Radko Gudas, Jacob Trouba, Chris Kreider, Mikael Granlund. They've got a lot of really savvy veterans. In a lot of ways, the Ducks and the Predators, from an experience standpoint, mirror each other. But my point is, Nashville facing Anaheim in the first round is a hell of a lot different than facing Colorado in the first round. So the one thing I think the Predators must do, Willie, in order to make a run in the playoffs if they get there, is they have to overtake Utah and they have to make it into the Pacific Division.
So now you're saying, I mean, it's just interesting how the discussion has changed. I never thought this would even be part of the discussion, right? I didn't think that Utah was catchable a couple weeks ago, but now you're right. I mean, you might as well keep chasing. Because, look, there's no question that the way that the West has unfolded this year, there's no comparison between, and this is why there's so much discussion about the playoff format itself, but the Central Division and the Pacific Division, you got the three Bears in the bracket in the Central, and it's not nearly as tough, regardless of who wins the Pacific Division, even though Edmonton and Vegas, their playoff experience, I think, would be valuable should one of those teams win that division, and it's not over yet. But yeah, the Ducks are the surprise team that are leading, and so wild card one, super coveted. The question is, what do we think that Utah has got left in the tank? Utah is an interesting team. Their numbers as a team are by far better than any of the wild card contenders. It's not even close. Their goal differential, their analytics night in and night out, the way they control the puck and they get the quality, they're better. So they should take wild card one. The one thing that they're trying to figure out, and this is why analytics aren't everything, is they don't have a team that's been there and done it, right? And you could say the same thing about the Ducks to an extent. But especially Utah, they're trying to learn how to win at the critical time of the season. I think that's what's hurting the Sharks now. It's catching up to them. The lack of experience, the youth. Utah's further along. They're quite a bit better than the Sharks. But I'm wondering about that ingredient as they play the high-stakes games to try to hang on to that spot. But they're a very good team. I still think the odds are they're going to hang on to that spot.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, both goaltenders, UC Saros and Justus Annunen, have been playing incredibly well over the past month. How should the Predators split their goaltending duties down the stretch? Willie and I will discuss that coming up next on Preds Insiders 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders on 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan and Willie Donick here with you. The Predators are back in action tomorrow night to continue their homestand against the New Jersey Devils. Puck drop at 7, pregame at 6, right here on 102.5 The Game. The homestand concludes on Saturday with a visit from the Montreal Canadiens before the Predators head out on the road, starting with a road game in Tampa against the Red Hot Lightning. And Willie, if you were to ask me why the Predators have been able to get back into the playoff race over the past month, my first answer would be goaltending. UC Saros and Justus Onninen have played outstanding hockey. If you look at all of the analytics, they would tell you that the Predators have been receiving the best goaltending in the league over the past month. So what will be interesting to see is how the Predators go about splitting the load over the remaining 11 games of the season. By my count, the Predators have two remaining back-to-back sets this season. So you know that Onanen should receive at least two more starts. But with the importance of getting UC Saros some rest, because let's not kid ourselves, if the Predators make the playoffs, UC Saros is starting every game, barring injury. Onanen has been great, especially last week when Saros was out for a couple of games because of injury. He was outstanding against Seattle. He was outstanding against Vegas, especially in that first period against the Vegas Golden Knights. But Onanen, if the Predators make the playoffs, he's probably not going to get any action unless Saros gets pulled in the game or if Saros suffers an injury. So I do think it's important for Saros not to be the bell cow down the stretch. I think it's important to build in some breaks for him. So if it were up to you, Willie Donick, how would you split up the goaltending load over the remaining 11 games?
I think the biggest thing that has emerged here in the last couple of months is that very quietly, and maybe not as quietly the last week, because he got the spotlight in the two games that UC Saros was hurt and played fantastic in both games. But behind the scenes, Justus Onninen, I think, has made a jump in his play. And what has happened is I think the team has grown way more confident in him. His confidence is up. And I think that is allowing them the ability to play him more and still feel like you're not dropping off anything when you're resting UC Saros, which really hasn't been the case the last couple of years, even as well as Kevin Lankinen played a couple of years ago, and Onanen's had his moments. But I think they've done a very good job behind the scenes developing Onanen, and he's gotten stronger as the year's gone along. It's just like we use November 26 so often as the turning point. That night, Onanen, after UC Saros had been lit up by Florida in that terrible 8-3 loss that looked like it sunk him for good, right before Thanksgiving, he goes to Detroit and gets his first win of the year. Onanen did not have a win going into that game. Since then, that started a streak where he's been 8-6-1, and he's gotten better each month. And his last month has been really outstanding. So all that to say, I would guess that Onanen is going to get more than just the two starts on the back half of back-to-backs. And UC Saros is playing his best hockey of the season right now, and he's a traditional strong closer to regular seasons. We've seen him put the team on his back and carry them into the playoffs. And I think both of them are going to need to continue to do that if they're going to make it, and certainly if they're going to have any eyes on the first wild card. But for example, tomorrow against the Devils, it would not surprise me if they come back with Onanen and then split the two games this weekend to give Saros a little extra rest. Remember, this is their second consecutive four-game week. And Saros, even though he had the injury, he's still in the top two or three of starts by goalies in the NHL. So I think Onanen's emergence here is giving them two things. Two goalies that can win a game for you or steal a game for you, but also giving Saros a little valuable rest.
Saros's 53 starts are second most in the NHL behind Vejmelka of the Vejmelka. Yeah. Sorry, is the J silent? A silent J? Like yogging?
It's a silent J, like, but yogging? That doesn't keep the people in Salt Lake from wearing the veggie heads.
See, that's where I probably got it from.
Yes, you did. Okay. You'll see them.
Vejmelka. My apologies. Yeah. Vejmelka. He has started 55 games for Utah. Saros has started 53 games for Nashville.
53 plus, what, six in the Olympics?
Yes, you do have to factor that in as well. Over the past 10 games, this stretch of 7-2-1, Saros and Onanen have combined for 9 quality starts in 10 games. A quality start is any start when the goalie saves more goals than expected, which means that Saros and Onanen have performed below expectation just once over the past nearly 3 weeks. And of Saros' seven starts, three of them have been steals. And a steal occurs when a goaltender's goal saved above expected number is greater than the final score differential. So Saros has been playing well. Although his traditional numbers may not be as sparkling as Onanen's over the past couple of weeks, Saros has been playing very well. And I agree with you, Willie. I think it's important for Onanen to get more into the rotation down the stretch so that UC Saros does have the opportunity to be as fresh as he can if and when the Predators start the playoffs. We'll see, of course, if they make it. They are in good position to do so right now. But Onanen's emergence has been, and I agree with you, Onanen's emergence has been a quietly positive development. It's not something that you really think too much about. Well, the backup goaltender's playing well. But when you have a backup goaltender who is playing well, your starting goaltender, who I would guess leads the NHL in total starts over the past several years, giving him a rest makes a huge difference.
Well, we're talking about, for the first time in a couple years, a true goalie tandem, like when they had Pekka-Rinne and UC Saros.
Right.
And you take for granted those three or four seasons where Saros was playing outstanding in goal, spelling Pekka-Rinne, who was a Vezina Trophy candidate. So I don't know if that's going to happen for good with Onanen, but I think everybody is really seeing improvement in Onanen, and you can see the mentorship that's going on, which is similar to Rinne and Saros. Saros is now that role for Onanen, and he keeps improving. And they give you a different look, too. So if there's a team that maybe a bigger goaltender might match up with better, maybe that's where you drop Onanen in on a particular start, as opposed to a different team, because Saros is so unique with his style. But that'll be something to watch in these last 11 games. How many starts does Onanen get?
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, there is one area of concern about the Predators' play as of late, despite how well they have been playing in terms of the wins and the losses. There is one area of concern that I have about their performance, which we will discuss coming up next. Willie Donick and Adam Vingan. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders on 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan and Willie Donick here with you. The Predators return to action tomorrow night inside Bridgestone Arena against the New Jersey Devils. Puck drop at 7, pregame at 6, right here on 102.5 The Game. The Predators going for their 6th win in a row as they make a late-season playoff push. The Predators 3 points ahead of the LA Kings for the final playoff spot in the Western Conference. The Predators are 3 points back of the Utah Mammoth for that first wild card spot, which I think is huge considering the gauntlet that awaits the winner, quote-unquote, of the second wild card spot in the Western Conference. But, Willie, as well as the Predators have been playing, and 7-2-1 over the past 10 games, 5 wins in a row, points in 8 of 10. There's not a lot to complain about with the way the Predators are playing. But there is one area of concern that I have about this team down the stretch. In the previous segment, we told you how well UC Saros and Justus Onanen have been playing. Since this 10-game stretch started, the Predators are the number one team in the league in total goals saved above expected at 5-on-5. Saros and Onanen have been covering up for some iffy, lackadaisical play in the defensive zone, and that's where my area of concern is. Specifically at 5-on-5, this team, for as well as it's been playing overall in terms of standings points, this team over the past 3 weeks has been playing like one of the worst defensive teams in the NHL. Here are some numbers to support that. The Predators are 26th out of 32 in expected goals against per 60 minutes at 5-on-5 over the past 10 games. They are 23rd in odd man rushes allowed per 60. They are 27th in inner slot shots against per 60. And they are 30th in offensive possession time, offensive zone possession time against per 60. A simple way of explaining this. They are spending way too much time chasing the puck in their defensive zone. And their opponents have been doing a good job of getting to the high danger scoring areas. Saros and Onanen have been standing on their heads, so to speak, and that's helped the Predators. What concerns me, Willie, is if Saros and Onanen slip up at any point and those defensive numbers don't improve, all of the good that the Predators have been doing as of late, it may evaporate.
And everybody, I think nobody's more aware of that than the coaching staff, headed up by Andrew Brunette. He is aware of those numbers. And I think what he's been trying to do in these last several games is get the young players who are all in there every night and are going to have to stay in there, an Adam Willsby, a Ryan Ufko, a Zach LaRue, Reed Schaefer, Joachim Kemmel, Fedor Svechkov, Matt Wood. These guys are still very young, and they're learning how to play the two-way game in the league, and they're playing really, really big games here, and it's not easy. So I think that is part of the reason, a pretty significant part of the reason, why they're giving up more territorial ground than they were before. But the results have been good, as you said. You know, goaltending is a big part of the game. Show me a team that's getting the good goaltending, and everybody feels better about the way you're playing and who's on your team and your chances to win every night. And conversely, I know you're doing some research right now on Vegas.
Yep.
And I think you could say the same thing about Ottawa early in the season when they weren't getting any goaltending. Now they're getting goaltending, and they're making a furious charge up the ranks in the very deep East, and now they're in a playoff spot. So the goaltending can rise and fall some, and you can only control as much as you possibly can with your structure. And I think that's what Andrew Brunette is trying to tweak right now, to correct those numbers, have the puck a little bit more. I think that's the answer to a lot of it, is if they just have possession of the puck more, that will help the balance and give up less chances.
If the Predators were to make the playoffs as the second wildcard team, for instance, right now that would mean they would draw the Colorado Avalanche. Let's say those defensive numbers don't improve. Nathan McKinnon and Marty Natchez and Cale Makar would be licking their chops. You can't give a high-octane offensive team, such as the Avalanche, that much time in your own zone, clear shots at the net from up close. That could spell disaster. Again, I know I'm getting ahead of myself, but I'm just trying to illustrate why the Predators need to improve this particular area before the end of the regular season. Because
they've got to improve it, I think, to get a chance to play
for sure
a team like the Avalanche
for sure,
or chase Utah down and maybe challenge for that first wild
card. I guess in my scenario, Saros and Onanen continue to play the way they're playing despite the Predators' defensive play.
We've seen it happen before, right?
Yes.
We've seen UC Saros almost single-handedly get them to the playoffs.
Right.
2021 would be the greatest example of
for
that.
For sure.
And we don't know. I mean, these 11 games, you got to hope that they continue to have the mojo. They're looking good
right
now.
It helps when you score 5 times on 7 shots.
Well, that's part of it, too. Like, I think we talked about this, and I know I got criticized some. People like, yeah, tell me. It's about results. But for a long time, for a year plus, their shot quality was not equating to as many goals as you would be expected to score. And now it's flipped, right? Right now, they don't have the puck a whole lot, but they're making plays. Their shooting percentage has come up. The greatest example is the line that we highlighted at the beginning. Matt Wood, Philip Forsberg, and Jonathan Marchessault. It's not like they're just beating people up with possession and just volume of shots. They haven't had the puck as much as you would ideally like, but when they do have it, they're making things happen. They're making plays. And that's also something that can come and go. But right now, that's how they're getting it done.
I'm curious for your analysis of the defensive pairs specifically. We were just talking about the defensive play as a whole, which is a team thing, not just the defensemen. But how have you seen the Predators' defensive pairs over the past number of games working out?
If you look closely, Andrew Brunette, and I think Luke Richardson is heavily involved in this as well. They are, especially with a young guy like Ryan Ufko, who has big strengths, right? We've seen his offensive skill and creativity, but he's also extremely inexperienced at the NHL level, and he's not a big guy. They're trying as best they can to put him in the best position to succeed, and they're doing that, I think, with all six defensemen. So right now, you write down the pairs every game with Adam Willsby back in there, and Willsby is definitely an upgrade. He can do some things that will hopefully help those numbers that we've been talking about, help them have the puck a little bit more. Willsby can skate the puck out of trouble. He's got really good mobility. That's the way that you help have the puck more, keep it out of your zone. But Josi and Shea, Hague and Perbix, Willsby and Ufko, but if you watch closely within the game, there'll be a lot of different combinations depending on the situation and where the puck starts. I've seen, for example, in an offensive situation, you might see Roman Josi and Ryan Ufko on the ice at the same time. Nick Hague much more in a defensive situation. So I think they've gotten better. And in particular, I would like to highlight Roman Josi and Brady Shea. Remember how disastrous it was at the beginning of last year, where as soon as they set foot on the ice, something bad would happen, and they would both look at each other going, what is going on here? We're both accomplished defensemen in this league, and we just can't catch a break. So they split them apart and really never tried it again. After the first month or two of last season, they've come back together quietly to play a lot of minutes together, and last night I think they were both plus four in that first period. So Brady Shea has not had the offensive numbers that you would expect him to have, but I think he's improved. And playing with Roman Josi, they're starting to find better chemistry and better things are happening when they're together. And that's an important thing.
Let's look ahead a little bit to the upcoming games on the schedule. The Predators have two more games left on this homestand. New Jersey tomorrow, Montreal on Saturday, before ending the week in Tampa against the Lightning. The mantra has been win the week. They are 1-0 to start this week. What do you make of the upcoming three matchups?
I think we touched on this a little bit earlier. Three teams from the East. The East is very deep. And you've got three teams that I think are all something to be reckoned with. Even the Devils, who are the least accomplished of the three on paper, the Devils have won 8 out of 11. They just won at Dallas the other night. They've been on this road. They're on the road right now. They're on the midst of a long road trip, but they've been winning games. So their confidence is up. They're loose. They're fast. So they are, I think, probably a better version of the Sharks and the Blackhawks that you saw. Up and down speed teams that cause some matchup problems when they can get it revved up. So Nashville will have to try to contain them. Then I think it even upgrades more. Saturday against Montreal, another young team that gets after it up and down the ice. And they've had much better mojo throughout the season, right? They've got the flair for the dramatic. That's going to be a really tough game for sure. And then you play maybe, arguably, the favorite in the East, Tampa Bay, the accomplished team. You've got Steven Stamkos going back to Tampa for only the second time. And last year was weird. Adam, when we went back, it was so early in the year. I don't think anything has really sunk in at that point. Now a whole year has gone by. I think the emotions will be running high in that building on both benches for that particular game, and it's the back half of a back-to-back. So challenging set of three here to win that week.
Nikita Kucherov, since January 1st, has 69 points in 31 games. Let me repeat that. 69 points in 31 games.
Over 2 points per game.
Yes. Connor McDavid, in the same number of games since January 1st, has 48 points. Nikita Kucherov, 69 points in 31 games since January 1st. McDavid, 48 in 31. Nathan MacKinnon, 45 in 30. Kucherov, I don't think Nikita Kucherov gets as much credit as he deserves.
I would agree.
He is one of the greatest offensive players this league has ever seen. And I feel like we don't talk about him like that. Again, 69 points in 31 games. That is an astounding pace, which has been replicated by maybe a few Hall of Famers in NHL history. So that team in Tampa has quietly been going about its business. It's 2 points back of the Buffalo Sabres, which is a strange thing to say, for first place in the Atlantic Division. But that team is a juggernaut. If the Predators can go to Tampa and win that game, that is a statement type of win. Because Tampa, you're not hearing a lot about Tampa this season. Buffalo's story has been taking up a lot of the headlines in the Eastern Conference. Tampa is a wagon, an absolute wagon.
And you have to give them full marks for year in and year out, going through the roster management that you have to do when you've been a good team for a long time to keep that window open. They've made some smart moves, and Kucherov just keeps carrying him. I think has to be right now the favorite to win the MVP, the Hart Trophy. And they're getting really good goaltending from Vasilevsky. The numbers, the underlying numbers, support how well they've done. They're not punching above their weight. Even though on paper, you look at them and say, well, over the years, they've lost Stamkos. They've lost Andre Palat. You can go down the list of a lot of guys who played a lot of big games on those teams that won the whole thing a few years ago. But they're still finding ways to get the right depth players. And their core guys who have been together for a while, the remaining core, still getting it done.
Predators are back in action tomorrow night against the New Jersey Devils. Puck drop at 7. Pregame at 6, right here on 102.5 The Game. Nashville going for its 6th consecutive win. We'll see if the Predators can do it. For Willie Donick, I'm Adam Bingham. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5 The Game.